Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
Run that, baby.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to One Heat Minute Productions podcast. I'm your host, Blake Howard, and this is a very special one because today I've got two guests who I'm surprising with a minute examination of a film. Not the film that you expect. I have another surprise. On another podcast, before I introduce my guests, the great Film Stage B-Side podcast with Connor O'Donnell and Dan Mecca, I discovered that I kind of have a Sean Harris impression, a Solomon Lane, maybe from watching too many like Sean Harris movies, obviously The Stranger, but most particularly Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation, and Fallout. So before I introduce my guest, which you would have had a little bit of a hint, and if you've read the show notes, you can see who they are already, so just stop. I have to say this to them. Your mission, should you choose to accept it. Drew Taylor and Charles Hood, I wonder, did you ever choose not to? That's right. It's the boys from the official Light the Fuse podcast. How are you, my friends?
We've always chosen to accept without any hesitation.
Whatever you put in front of us, we accept it.
Yep.
That's not even a question.
Not even a question. How the hell are you? Besides tired.
We're tired. We're very tired. I like that you knew already.
Before. I knew. I know. I mean, you guys have just become official. If you didn't know that, the incredible history of Light the Fuse all the way back, like, what is it, 234 episodes, 224, something like that?
Yeah, when we got to 230 something before we our numbers had to stop.
Before your numbers stopped.
We have now teamed up with Paramount to create now Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast. And now our episodes are no longer numbered. Now there's more of a story to each title, I guess, the way I guess I would say it.
And now,
how are you enjoying the titles that I'm coming up with, Blake?
I love it. I love it. Okay. And a couple of them I have known are Drew's.
Okay, that's like, Drew. That's a terrible pun. Drew.
No. You're wrong. See, when I see a pun, it's like the great Justin Chang from the LA Times. When Justin like has a hilarious pun title, some people like just jump on him, and you can tell he's just like a sadist. He loves saying it so that people like get into his head. And I read these, and I'm like, I love this so much. This is, I'm the One Heat Minute Increment Vice. Like, this is my shit. You know, like I love this.
That's true. I'm talking to the master right now.
I am your target audience. Also, you guys have gone from just like absolute sort of underground heroes toiling away, being disavowed, but you are now officially avowed. And I think much like Mark Wahlberg in Boogie Nights, you are shining stars. You have whipped it out and intimidated all of us movie podcasters with just the murderer's row of guests. All obviously Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 related, but holy shamoly. Shay Wiggum, Greg Tarzan Davis, Pom Klementieff. Like, I talk to these guys outside of when we're actually live recording. So I know some people that they've already spoken to and heard some episodes.
Yes.
Finally, properly Simon, which is amazing.
Simon, yes. And there's going to be more from Simon. I can say that. And I can also say we've got a two-part episode coming up with Kittredge, Henry Cerny, which we're really excited about.
Oh, my God.
And we've got Rebecca Ferguson coming soon, too. So
unbelievable.
And more, but we just can't talk about them.
And don't worry, for diehard fans, we'll be back to talking to the gaffers and production coordinators soon enough.
That will never end. Don't you worry. Yeah. We already have some leads on some people that are exciting to us in terms of like, below the line people. Like came across somebody who does is doing previs for part two of Dead Reckoning.
Ooh,
it's like,
that's
someone we're going to talk to next year after the movie comes out. But and also there's a great one coming up with Lauren Balfe, I can say as well.
I love Lauren Balfe.
That we're official, we can use the music, the actual music. So when Lauren is talking about different tracks, we're going to be able to play songs.
Oh man,
from the score and have him. And he also was at a piano when he talked to us. So he was playing the piano to illustrate some of the things he was talking about.
I might die.
Really great.
If you are as hard for this series and their show as I am, do not drive while you're listening to it. You just put your feet up at home, relax. Don't want to freak out. And yeah, look, you guys are doing such a sensational job, and I thought it would be so great to come and just celebrate everything you're doing. And like I said, I'm such a fan that I just start talking to people who don't even know exactly like David Koepp's impression of Brian De Palma, thanks to your show, you know?
Mission Impossible. What are you doing? Mission Impossible.
So love you guys. And for everyone who's not seeing, I do now own the Tom Cruise Eras t-shirt, Ethan Hunt Eras t-shirt, that is unauthorized but is awesome, and I bought it especially for this show. So lads, by the time we're talking, Macquarie has done, I guess, the Empire, I don't know if it's a podcast, I'm just going to call it a retreat, a confessional, where he just goes and talks for 24 hours with Empire.
He's doing a live one right now with them while we're recording this. Well, I think he's doing another live version with Empire as well.
And I also know that after some recent conversations, you guys had been told this information, and I know that it's probably going to come out on a later episode, and you guys have now shared it with me just as we were running up to it. But there was one, the juiciest of all juicy what ifs on Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, which was, do we do a flashback to 1989 Mission Impossible, like Mission Impossible Zero? Who would direct that? Charles, who would direct that?
Macquarie said it would be Tony Scott.
The King Tony. And who would also star in it? A digitally de-aged Drew.
That would be none other than Julia Roberts. It's part of Macquarie's whole philosophy of how you do flashbacks in that context, which is very interesting. And maybe we will get him to talk about it, or maybe not. Who's to say? But yes. I think he talked about it in the Empire podcast. So,
today, you guys have gone from being rogue agents to now sort of officially sanctioned spies. So,
but just like Luther at the end of the first movie, I think we're going to miss being disreputable.
Don't worry, you're still disreputable to me. Now, let's get disreputable. We're going to go one heat minute classic style. I have the 37th minute of a movie with you to tackle. A movie directed by Tony Scott. A movie that is all about tradecraft and spies. Gentlemen, we're going to watch the 37th minute of Spy Game, and we're going to unpack it together, starring Robert Redford, who I also think could have been a sick recruiter in 89 for a Tom Cruise's Ethan Hunt, recruiting Brad Pitt and part of the beginning of their tradecraft. So I thought we could do this together. Take your minds off of current films. Let's get to Tony. Let's talk Tony. Let's talk spies. Let's not talk about the hypothetical spy movie that Tony Scott could have made in 1989. And let's actually watch Spy Game.
I love this movie. Do you love this movie, Charles?
I think I've seen it maybe only once.
This movie, so, Charles, is such
I
a
love
childhood
Tony, I mean,
movie.
I love pretty much every Tony Scott movie I've seen, I love. So I don't really remember it that well.
We're going to we're going to go classic style here. So I'm going to, for everyone who is now listening, I'm going to flick it over so that the three of us can watch a minute of this thing together. You guys are going to hear it, and then we're going to come back and talk about it.
I can probably make arrangements for you to end your tour of duty in San Diego, in which case I'll presume you'll forget we ever had this conversation. But look, at your choice. Next day, we started his trade craft.
Well, technology gets better every day, and that's fine. Most of the time, all you need is a stick of gum, a pocket knife, and a smile.
That's disappointing.
Good morning, mine Aaron. Today, we're going to be discussing a radio set. Not just any radio set, but a Russian radio set.
Every building, every room, every situation, a snapshot. I'm sitting here talking to you. I'm also checking the room, memorizing the people, what they're wearing. Then I ask the question, what's wrong with this picture? Anything suspect?
You gotta see it, assess it, and dismiss most of it without looking, without thinking.
Without thinking?
It's just like breathing. You breathe, don't you?
Always carry cigarettes and a lighter, too.
Gentlemen.
That music is so awful.
That music is awesome. It's awesome.
It's so Tony Scott from that period, but oh my God.
So, if I was imagining a 1989 Mission Impossible Zero with Tony Scott, I would start no further than Spy Game, which that piece of tradecraft, that city, those looks, the high necks, it's a sensational film, and that's just one of my favorite. It's that sequence goes for much longer, and I know it's the inherent torture of doing a minute-by-minute podcast is that we don't get to talk much around it before we talk about the thing. But There's a lot in there, gentlemen, that feels very like Christopher McQuarrie didn't need to look far if he was thinking about what the style would be. And I would have loved to seen some hard cuts and some sped up footage and hear some wailing guitar and people.
What about the
skivvies,
rewinding? The rewinding before he does the actual physical rewinding. That was pretty good. Yeah.
Yes. So good.
But it also, I mean, Spy Game is 2001 Tony Scott. And how different is 2001 Tony Scott from 1989 Tony Scott? Because I would argue he evolved quite a bit.
Oh, there was a drastic sort of cinematic evolution. But I'm just talking about, like, when I look at that, the frenetic pace, because he still had the pace. And the idea of that particular time, because he's in Eastern Europe, I'm just like, oh, this feels like a great, you know, like, it's Eastern Europe. It's 3 days of the Condor, De Niro, 3 days of the Condor, Redford kind of stylistically. Yeah. It's Brad Pitt with that kind of like weird. There's like two guys in the world that can do that weird, like half long, half short hair and look absolutely stunning. And one of them is Tom Cruise,
look,
and the other
I
is
think,
Brad Pitt.
Pitt's hair is great in this, but it's no Cruz hair.
It's close.
If this was Ethan Hunt in there, then I think it would look a lot better.
Distractingly beautiful. Yes,
I think Ethan could pull off the mullet better than Brad Pitt does. I gotta say.
And look,
no, but I guess what I mean is no, like absolutely, this totally. I see why you picked this. It's amazing. It's such a great scene that it really does feel like this could have been what would be like Ethan Hunt's, you know, entry into the IMF in 1989. I guess for me, when I think of Tony Scott here, this is like where he's starting to push towards like domino levels of, or like the BMW short he did, where it's just absolute madness in terms of the cutting.
Man on fire.
Much slower cut around the time of Top Gun and Days of Thunder, you know?
Yeah, it's bigger and it's wilder and it's color graded in a weird way, you know, back then, but it's not quite Man on Fire. I'm going to shoot you with 6 cameras. And then I'm going to shoot and they're all going to have different film stocks and lenses. And so I'm going to then cut like intuitively between that. That's like Man on Fire, Tony Scott, where he is just feeling it.
Our boy, Dan Mandel, just killing the game 24/7.
Yeah.
How do you hate this music, Drew Taylor? What are you doing?
You always choose things with incredibly era specific.
I mean, come on, Blake. It's one heat minute. Of course, Blake is gonna love the.
It's like
this. That music doesn't feel like it would be out of step in a Michael Mann movie. You know,
not at all. Michael Mann is
gonna love it.
Has a singularly terrible taste in music. not at the beginning. Not at the beginning. You know, all the Tangerine Dream and all the Inagata Davida. You know, until the end of time. But then. Then things took a turn.
You can't say that it's. I disagree. You can't even all the way up to 2000, like even up to all the way to 2006. The Miami Vice soundtrack is peerless.
I'm somewhere in between the two of you, where it's like I don't like the music. I would not be listening to this music on my own, but it suits the movie. It's like the kind of movies that Michael Mann makes, and in this case also Tony Scott as well, like the like man's man type movie, where it's like, yeah, this fits the vibe of what we're doing here.
You know, this is the thing about the tease of a Tony Scott Mission Impossible is, despite the fact that I think the three of us all love Macquarie. He's so fantastic. He is not a Tony Scott level drip lord. Now, Tony Scott wearing a vest with no shirt underneath, a hat and really high shorts and like chewing on a cigar is the fucking coolest shit of all time. Like forget yes. all other directors. It's like, you know, I remember when Tom Ford, the terrific designer, you know, started making films. Single Man is my favorite of his. Absolutely sensational. And I remember people in set that like, you know, Colin Firth particularly was just like, I remember this guy coming and making this movie and every day he's wearing a 3-piece suit and he just looks immaculate every single day. And he almost looked better than the actors who were in front of him while he was directing them. And I'm like, yeah, you can have your Tom Ford. I want Tony Scott with a vest and like 7 pens and no shirt. That's the guy I want directing every movie. It's just the coolest shit of all time.
Yeah. He's like the quintessential image of, well, he's more like a John Ford type old school, but to the modern day, which is great.
So, Charles, I can't believe you'd never really seen much of Spy Game. I thought this was
I've seen it before, but I think I've only seen it once.
You have to go back to the spreadsheet. Do you have the spreadsheet open on your computer?
Like now that watching that clip made me feel like, oh God, I need to watch this again. I mean, most of Tony Scott's movies I've seen more than once. This one is not one of them, though.
Tell people about the spreadsheet if they haven't been long in doing this.
I'm mad at Charles for Charles has somewhat moved away from the spreadsheet, and I
have not moved away from the spreadsheet. I still log. So we have let's talk about the spreadsheet. We have it's now called the moving image log. It used to be called a movie log, but we do put TV stuff in there as well. And it's a Google sheet where Drew and myself and a few of our other friends put everything that we watch on there. Now this year I was convinced, actually Paul Scheer came on our podcast earlier this year and he gave me a good sales pitch for why Letterboxd is great. Cause I was afraid, I don't like to rate movies, especially newer ones. I'm not trying to like You know, it's hard to make movies.
There are rules.
Hard to make movies. And so I'm like, I don't want to put on there. My writing partner's on there. I tell him, I'm like, you should not be rating movies on there. It's not a good idea. But he does it anyway, and I hate him for it. So I'm like, I can't do that. I don't want to. It's not fair to other filmmakers. It's not fun to rate movies that way. Also, just put a number on them, essentially, you know. So I'm just like, I didn't want to do that. But Paul Scheer was like, he's like, I don't even use it for that. It's just a good way to log what you're watching and to let people like to know what your friends are watching and what everybody's watching, which is partially what our movie log has done. But the thing that I really liked about Letterboxd that was the added thing is that it keeps statistics.
Yes.
So I can I'd have to like do a search in our Google sheet and like manually figure out how many times I watched a movie and count it myself. Now with Letterboxd, it just tells me, oh, you've watched Zodiac 24 times. And it's like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. You know, like,
I
that's what I like about having Letterboxd. So I use both, Drew. I'm still doing the movie.
I feel like you are really looking for outside approval of your viewing habits. And I don't want you to have any kind of validation. And two, you know, there was something pure, you know, we had really something going. You and I specifically, I think that's why it really feels like such a
betrayal.
Betrayal. Yeah.
Okay, Drew, just so you know, 100%, no, there's no shame on the log that you and I have with the spreadsheet. I will put titles in there as I watch them. But I will say, because of what you're talking about in terms of getting validation on Letterboxd, when I watch something that I'm not particularly proud of watching, I'll wait a few movies later before I put it in there in the log, so that the most recent movie will be one that people will be more like, oh cool, he's watching some old classic movie rather than watching Your Highness again.
Benji the Hunted for the ninth time.
Benji, exactly.
Oh my god, that's so funny. So Brandon Streisig, really talented writer and podcaster. He's guested on our show a couple of times, actually, because he's younger than us, gave me a tutorial, yes. Which is,
I love him on Twitter. I don't know him personally at all, but I just really love what he's done. I follow him on Letterboxd too. I love what he writes about movies. It's really great.
He's so good. He's like this. Oh no, sorry. It was another friend of ours, Responsible Bob, but it's Brandon lives this too, which is you either rate a movie 5 stars or just put a love heart, because there's the love heart, like that you like this movie, or nothing. That's the like that's what the kids do. It's 5 stars or nothing.
I noticed that Ben David Grabinski does that as well. Yeah, he does 5 stars for movies, or he does no rating.
When Ben David Grabinski almost ended our friendship when I rated Under Siege 2.5 stars.
That sounds like him.
He was so mad, and he took that rating straight to Twitter and dragged me to hell. It was really good.
Dark territory, man. Come on.
Eric Bogosian just on that train causing mischief. We love it. From talk radio,
I was
dark
like,
territory. That's
I was
my
like...
Eric Bogosian biography title.
But you know, I was like, nah, I'm good. You know, it's fine, but it's really, Under Siege 2 really hits with the dirt bags. It really hits. And
we
so
needed Die Hard on a
it.
Train. We needed it.
Yeah, of course we did. Die Hard, but wet, Hard Rain. We needed it, you know?
I rewatched Hard Rain recently. What a movie. Let me tell you, what a movie.
I've actually never seen it. Now
it
movie.
Looks like it cost like $100 million. I mean,
who
it
directed
didn't.
It?
Michael, what's his last name? The DP, who's done a lot of great stuff.
I'm looking
We
it
love
up
DPs directing things.
Michael Salomon.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
It is that. That's the thing. Like, I can't remember what it was. Like, it's a Twitter thread. It's like, isn't it funny that like a movie in the 90s that you would watch and you would think, oh, this is trash, now looks like a Scorsese movie compared to the garbage.
Any 90s action movie over literally anything that comes out today.
Yeah. Yeah, they just look.
It's mind blowing. You watch it and you're like, oh my God, the care that goes into every shot. It looks gorgeous.
I can't believe he shot The Abyss and then he was like, yeah, I'll go ahead and direct Hard Rain. Like, it just is, it's mind blowing to think about.
It's like, aren't you sick of water? You know,
yeah.
Michael Salomon.
And it's so. And I have a real thirst for blood, and Hard Rain is really violent.
Yes.
And I really appreciate that. Yeah.
It's yeah, Charles, you gotta revisit that.
Drew definitely has a bloodlust. I will back that up. He is not lying.
We've heard some of his interviews and he goes for the throat, and I love it. I love it.
Yeah, hard.
I just mean Drew will appreciate a movie that gets real bloody. He'll appreciate a movie.
No. And I also appreciate Drew's interviews where someone avoids a question and Drew goes, So you're avoiding the question. Okay, cool. Let's move on.
Yes, Drew is relentless. He's a good interviewer that way. He won't let up. He won't let people off the hook.
No. Maybe I will now because we have to be kinder and gentler in our new form.
I hope you have it. Stop being you.
Now you have it.
We have to remember to hashtag keep Drew weird.
You don't have to worry about that. You do not have to worry about that. The greatest junket game of all time. Guardians of the Galaxy or LaGuardia Airport. thank you.
Scraping the bottom of the barrel on that one. That's fine.
No, you weren't.
You really committed to it too. I thought that there was going to be some kind of twist on it, maybe that you weren't going to do, but you just literally just went straight for defining LaGuardia Airport or Guardians.
People could not believe. There's probably a 15-minute cut of that video somewhere where people just were losing their minds. They could not believe my commitment to the bit.
Yeah, it was pretty great.
Yeah.
So I put that clip back on from Spy Game again. So it's like, yeah, he's got the like Tony Scott, like the white flashes and the sped up stuff. And it's just like, yeah, I feel like.
And testing your heart rate against interrogation. Studying Russian radios, which very Dead Reckoning, Dead Reckoning has seen all the Russians are the bad guys movies of that kind of period, early 90s, all from the Bond espionage era, but it's got that kind of feel to it. And just the idea that tradecraft, and I know that another movie that we I think collectively love is Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. It's that whole there's some feelings there, and that's one of my favorite things about Skyfall, and I feel like that they're kind of positioning themselves for this with Dead Reckoning Part 2 is, you know, when you have an AI that can infiltrate all of your technological advantage, what's the one thing that you have to do? You kind of have to go Jason Bourne. You kind of have to go Tinker Tailor. You have to go off the grid, you know, like with Bond, you know, here's a Walther PPK that's coded to your palm print, a nice personal touch when you kill, and a radio transmitter, gun and a radio. I'm like that. When that conversation happens with Q, I'm like, this is everything. Just a guy and a gun and a fucking radio. Let's go.
Charles is not a Skyfall super fan like the two of us. So
no, I think Skyfall's fantastic. I think it's like top 10 Bond. I just don't think it's as good as Casino Royale.
No,
of course. Of course.
Thank you, Blake. Thank
I think
you.
It's better than Casino
I'm sorry.
Royale.
I'm sorry. I'm yeah. It's almost like, because fuck, I love Martin Campbell. Holy shit. Talk about another fantastic action director who loves death. love Martin Campbell. But I would just say that, oh yeah, I'm sorry. I just got distracted on a Martin Campbell thing of going like, how good is like Zorro? Is Zorro the first one? That's
the
so
first one is great. The second one is an absolutely bizarre movie that I only saw in like the last 5 years. And I was so baffled by it.
Yeah. Yeah, not for me.
It's about their divorce. The two hottest people in the world are talking about their divorce. Why do we want to hear about this or see this? Yeah.
No. Definitely not. No. Definitely not. I also just think that like Casino Royale just it has Vesper. It has Vesper. It's got the what I've lovingly called from the moment I saw it, the Whippy McDick scene, because I didn't know who Mads Mikkelsen was. And I was like, who's that guy, Whippy McDick? You know, the guy who smashes Bond in the dick. Like Mads Mikkelsen. I'm like, Whippy McDick. Love him. Whippy McDick. Yeah. And you can't, it's undefeated.
Yeah.
Casino Royale. It's so good. But that doesn't mean that Skyfall's not great.
Yeah.
Agreed. It's almost like, you know, it's the thing that your show does so beautifully. It's like, listen, not everyone's favorite Mission Impossible movie as this franchise is Mission Impossible 2. But man, tell me a better movie to watch on mute. There isn't. There's not a single one.
Yeah, but you miss Zimmer and Lisa Gerrard's amazing score.
Well, yes. maybe a score cut. You know how you can get they're starting to do that with some
isolated music.
They don't do that anymore. It's so disappointing.
The last one that had it that I can remember, I know this might be a weird pull, but it's like I got a 4K of The Last Jedi, and I think there's a Last Jedi. There's like a cut Fallout. On that.
Didn't Fallout have it too? Was that after one? Last Jedi?
Does Fallout have one?
Doesn't Fallout have a Lauren Balfe commentary with isolated music?
Oh, yes, you're right. I think he talks during the lulls in the score. Yes.
Yeah.
The one they need to do
that might be
is
the last one. I can't think of one since then.
Yeah. They need to do a Tron Legacy disc.
Oh.
With just the music and the images. I mean, I know that there's not that much talking in the movie, but like that would just be the best.
Honestly,
I want that on in the background all the time.
See, what I'm hoping is in Australia, we only now have one IMAX, official IMAX theater. We've got a lot of like imitators and people that say that they're big and blah, 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 but they're not. They all stink. We have some phenomenal retro houses that play things in 70 mil and it's all, you know, 70 or 35, particularly Hayden Orpheum, which I'm a huge fan of. So if anyone is listening, if you're in Australia or in Sydney, that's your number one stop for retro theater in Sydney. But we used to have the biggest IMAX screen in the Southern Hemisphere. And I still tell people to this day, my favorite experience ever in Sydney IMAX was Tron Legacy 3D IMAX.
What happened to that theater?
Well, it got upgraded into a hotel because it's actually in like the prime position in Darling Harbour, like right in the heart of Sydney. And there is an IMAX theater that's opening. They're refreshing it. So part of the deal was if you kill IMAX, you have to build a theater in the hotel structure, but it's not opening until November. So like where we did the premiere in Sydney was at the International Convention Center, which is across the road from where IMAX used to be. And the theater that they showed Dead Reckoning, where I was lucky enough to sing Happy Birthday to Tom Cruise. I felt very like we were harmonizing across oceans and continents there. When that happened, the ICC is the biggest theater, like for people, cinema theater that I've been in Sydney in some time. Like there were thousands of people there. It was absolutely bedlam. It was sensational. But the IMAX is opening across the road, and that's what I'm hoping. The minute that IMAX opens, they put some retro screenings on and get like Tron Legacy back in there, and they get Ghost Protocol, because that's where I saw the premiere for Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. So when you see the Burj, it's on that enveloping screen, and everyone in the, you know, my best friend Maria, she's not great with big IMAX screens. She sometimes gets vertigo. She literally ran out and had a spew and then came back in to watch the rest of Ghost Protocol because it was so intense looking down at that freaking
it really was. I still think it's like, I mean, I just saw Oppenheimer in IMAX 70 millimeter, which blew my mind. It was incredibly gorgeous. And you know, there were other ones too, like the Dark Knight, and I'm trying to think of other ones that were as impactful. It's not really many. It's a very small number that are that big of an impact. But Ghost Protocol, still to me, I can remember the feeling of when he went out on the edge of the Burj Khalifa and like me holding onto the sides of my seat because I was like, am I going to fall? Like, I don't really remember having that feeling as much. There were a couple of moments like that in The Dark Knight, I remember too, where I was like, holy crap. The first time I saw that movie, right from that opening shot, it was like that too, but it's special.
One of the last things that IMAX did before they shot was they had a Dark Knight trilogy, screening there, and so
that's awesome.
It was amazing. I made my wife come along and watch that one with me. Actually, it's one of the last times we went and saw a movie marathon, and that plane sequence at the beginning of Dark Knight Rises is fucking spellbinding on IMAX. Holy shit, it's amazing stuff. We'll be right back after this quick break.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So how are you guys doing at the end of this Dead Reckoning thing? Because like, this is the other thing. The world
is it the end? It just feels like the beginning for us.
Well, for us, this is not the end. No.
No, but it just feels like everyone I know is talking about Barbie and Oppenheimer. Really enjoyed Barbie. Really loved Oppenheimer. But I'm dying to see back at the theaters, and it feels like this stupid thing where people are like, I'm either going to Barbie or Oppenheimer. It's like, you know that there's a fucking all-timer of an action movie in the theater also right now that is like losing its screens to all of these other things. It's like it's crazy. Like, so what, how have you guys been on the wave of like, it's Mission, it's this, it's like couple of the biggest releases in the last couple of years all converging together. How are you guys doing amongst it? Is it crazy?
I mean, it's different from obviously last summer when Top Gun Maverick, like, you know, as Spielberg said to Cruise, like,
saved the cinema.
Like, it saved the cinemas because it was like the only thing that was playing in theaters all summer. And now Mission Impossible, which is a good thing. I mean, I think, yeah, you know, that there's the healthy theater going is there's people going out there and seeing the movie and movies in theaters, which is wonderful. But Mission, it's got an A cinema score and it's got unbelievable reviews. Like, so I'm hoping that it will still manage to make a lot of money and stay in, because it's going to have a longer window than most movies.
There's nothing. So I don't know. There's nothing else coming out. It's a complete, I don't know, you know, you guys in post-American summer in Australia between now and kind of October, it will be a ghost town, like for new releases. It's
well, and, what about Ninja Turtles?
Well, other than Ninja Turtles, I did love
amazing.
How you tagged Light the Ooze the other day. That was a very good.
Light the Ooze is coming. It's very
real. We
have a
Light the Ooze segment coming up on the show.
Love it.
We did. Drew and I moderated the Hall H panel at San Diego Comic-Con for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem. Well, because I know it feels like probably, oh, they're just Paramount guys now, that's what they do. But like, it was like Drew saw the movie early at Annecy, the animation festival in France, and he was raving about it. And I was like, okay, you know, I haven't really loved anything Ninja Turtles really since like the first live action movie.
Since 89.
I loved the second one when I was a kid. I actually even loved the third one when I was a kid, but I've heard it's like absolutely unwatchable, and I have not returned to it since I was whatever 9 years old, because I just don't want to ruin the idea of what it was in my head. Because to me, I'm like, oh, it was so cool, the turtles travel through time. Anyway, I revisited the first movie and I still think it's fantastic. The live action one with the Jim Henson puppets, it's like magic. It's wonderful, and it's so dark and wet and grimy, and really the direction by Steve Barron I think is really, really wonderful. But anyway, Drew took me to a press screening for this movie, and I was like, I don't know about this. And I was blown away. I really think the new movie is fabulous. It's so funny. The animation is gorgeous, and we're obsessed with it. So because we were so excited about it, they were like, oh, do you guys want to moderate the panel at Hall H? Which was absolutely unreal for me. I'd never been to Comic-Con, so it was all new for me.
Drew is a seasoned veteran of Comic-Con, right, Drew?
Yes. The best part of going official is bringing Charles into the seedy underbelly of the journalism world and forcing him into junket scenarios and Comic-Con. And saying, yeah, this is what I live with, man.
Yeah, Drew is a yeah. Drew is a longtime veteran of this, all the journalism world with this stuff, and I this is all new
and in these moments I just imagine it's like the exchange with the nuclear material at the beginning of Fallout. Like Charles is like Benji and Drew's like, oh, it's fine, you want to be
I'm like smoking a cigarette
and here's me in the side. Here's me on the side. You want to be in the field, tough guy.
That's right.
That is what it's like.
but that's what I'm saying. Like I'm, you know, I took my kids to see Across the Spider-Verse. I'm really excited for Ninja Turtles because it's just another thing that I get to take them to. But I just feel like these big releases, they're kind of going to have some legs. They can't go and see Meg 2, unfortunately. But I will. And there doesn't seem to be much. And in Australia, like our release of Asteroid City is way later than yours. So that's been out at theaters, right? Like Asteroid
it's
City.
It's already streaming but it's already on POV, PVOD. Yeah.
Yeah.
Here, yeah.
Yeah. So in Oz, that's coming out in August. So there's like a couple of things that have been delayed, but there's really not that much left.
Yeah, so I think the hope is that Dead Reckoning will have legs then, because it, you know, because they've insisted on having a long theatrical window for it. So
yeah, I think that those will all happen. But and then we get to this, you know, that I in my interview with Chris McQuarrie, where I was playing in your yard. Sorry,
it was a great interview. I encourage everyone who has not watched it or listened to it to go do it. Do so now.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. But that was super fun. And the one thing that I got out of that, and I'm sure you guys have got too, like talking to them, is like 40% of the movie is done. And now we are literally headlong into a SAG after a strike with the WGA. And it's like, there's only 40% of this thing done. Can we sort this out so Mission can get back underway? Because we need to see the end.
Yeah, we were going to go back on set next month originally.
Yeah. But actually, the SAG strike might be the best thing for the movie, because if they went back with the writer's strike going on and they went back to filming with the way these movies are made, the Mission
they
Impossible
get written
movies
on the
in
day.
Particular,
they get written
they're
on the
rewriting
day.
Every day.
Yes.
And so if they couldn't do that, then it would have really potentially negatively impacted the movie and what the movie could be, because of the process that they do, that McQuarrie and Cruise do with these movies. So I think SAG strike is actually good for Mission. Like,
let's get it
all sorted out. Let's get everybody. Let's get the writers and the actors what they need, and then let's get back to it.
It might have a finished script. It might have a finished.
They do have a finished script. Yeah,
there is a finished script for 8, according to Eric Jenderson,
who is the co-writer.
As Charles says, that is just not how they make these movies. They've had scripts before.
Yeah,
that hasn't meant anything to the final movie,
and they do chuck it out. Yeah,
because you know, their whole approach is that it's like a living, breathing organism, and every day something comes up that makes them, inspires them in some new way to go down a whole new, you know, path. Like they told us in our interview when we interviewed Cruise and McQuarrie in Rome, they told us about what happened on Fallout when they did Vanessa Kirby's coverage. They did her side of a conversation with Cruise, and it was the first scene they shot with her, and she brought this different energy to it than they anticipated. And they were like, oh, maybe this character is something completely different than we'd planned. And then they were talking about how they have to like put in their minds everything they've filmed.
Was the energy
going to change?
Was the energy that she's just so unfathomably hot that you're like, we have to make every scene like a seduction, potential seduction scene, because she's just...
I think they didn't say exactly what that was, but my assumption is that it was like a Vanessa Redgrave like approach that she had, because I don't think that at that point they were planning to have her be Max's daughter. I don't know for sure, but I don't know if they were planning that at that point, because that was something they added later.
Amazing.
But I feel like she had that vibe, and they were like, man, this is really amazing what she's doing here. Let's go down this road and let's change everything that we need to change going forward and adjust some things, you know, before this to make this work.
But
I think McQuarrie said that it completely changed what they had marketed so far for Ethan's character in the movie, even. So I'm sure it goes even beyond what I'm saying. So it's amazing.
But the difference is that unlike those other movies, being a part one, you kind of know what the end. I mean, I know that every movie is its own new thing, but and they have to be self-contained. But it's like,
right,
They are shooting stuff while they're cutting Dead Reckoning. So they are knowing what's harmonizing between the two films. They're knowing what, you know, people are reacting to or responding to, both positively and negatively on the series, and they can kind of like make their adjustments. And the blessing is that because Macquarie and Cruise, you know, have all of this other footage stuff that maybe they've, you know, haven't used in other movies and whatever, they can just decide, okay, well, you know, we're going to pivot here. We're going to have a flashback, but it's not really a flashback. It's just a scene that they cut from a previous thing. They can tweak and adjust. And I feel like, you know, they might be right that it is the closest, because it's like they've had a whole movie to find what the voice of this new two-parter is going to be.
It's fascinating. It's a totally different thing, obviously, with a two-part movie. But I think in the end, it's still, you know, like when they did part one, they filmed the motorcycle stunt. They've said this now in interviews, that they filmed the motorcycle stunt without knowing how exactly it would fit in.
Yeah.
So like, and I see it when I watch it, because, you know, they're so transparent about these stunts, and they a year ago they had a whole featurette about making this motorcycle stunt. You see, like, just seeing a little bit of the cracks here, like when you see what Tom Cruise does when he does the stunt, his performance is a little bit different from what his character is doing in that moment. Like when he starts the motorcycle, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like if they knew how it was playing out in that moment, he probably would have acted it a little bit differently, just to say, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, but the thing is, they've kind of got something really right in all these series, which is like, they've taken ownership of the potential of people frothing a particular stunt. And in this one, the biggest joy, and this is what you're getting dragged into right now, is there's nothing worse in the world than a critic screening. Like, there isn't anything worse in the world than when you go see a great movie that you're really excited to see, and there's a whole bunch of stuffy critics, because if it doesn't have some punters there who are actually real people, like, it can be a really different vibe. Like, I remember so many Australian screenings that my best mate Maria and I talk about, and so many critics that we know, like, you go to a screening and you hear people like laughing and having a good time, and then you read their review and they shit on the movie, and you're like, bitch, I was sitting right next to you. You had a fun time at this thing, you know, like, have some integrity. But my joy was, I watched Dead Reckoning for my interview with Macquarie. And then when I saw the big one, the gargantuan screening with the crew and that massive audience, everyone went crazy for that scene. And I remember looking at my wife, because she knew that it was coming. She's like, you've made me watch that stupid featurette like 9 times. Like, she knew it was coming, but it's also like, we knew it was coming. It kind of fits or it doesn't for you, but they seem to have that miracle of like, everyone was anticipating this great shot that's on this poster behind me. You know, like, everyone was anticipating that, like, going, holy. And even afterwards, some of those videos that went on socials of like Shay and Pom and Tarzan and Haley.
Yeah, they're all there.
And
watching
Simon
it,
all
it
watching.
Happened.
Yeah. And like, there's nothing cooler than Tarzan's laugh of like, oh my God, Tom Cruise might die. And he just laughs like a fool. It's the coolest thing of all time. So great.
Yeah. But I feel like that's, but with part two, sorry, what I was trying to say about the part one, that stunt in part one, is that they didn't know where it was going to go. So even though they do have 40% technically of part two filmed, they still like, they have big stunts filmed for it, and they don't know exactly what the emotional pieces are before and after those things, you know? So like, they'll still find those things as they go. That's just what they do.
So,
because they're always trying. I mean, I think they have ideas for what it is now, but it evolves, because they are constantly trying to make the most satisfying thing for an audience.
So now that you're here and you're in the bowels of Paramount, are there any big people, i.e. like a JJ, who you guys are really actively pursuing? Can you give us any hints of like some people that you've like been dying to try and talk to, and now that you're official, you're trying to tee up for us to hear in the future? Is there anything
tease? We've always had our Mount Rushmore of people who we haven't talked to yet. So like Colin Atwood, obviously, JJ, Wu, you know,
Ving Rhames, for sure.
Yeah. I'm sort of discounting all the actors at the moment, just because that is an impossibility for the foreseeable future. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe Maybe we've lost our cool factor and they won't come on because we were just a couple of scrappy guys. Now we're inside the mountain. If you look at the logo, you can actually see Charles and myself on the mountain.
Before Drew, when you were saying that you guys were going to go to set, there's a scene in Dead Reckoning. This is not a spoiler, where there's a whole bunch of intelligence personnel that are whiling away to take digital records and type them into physical pieces of paper. It's like a gigantic warehouse. And
we could have been in that scene.
And my friend Stu Coote said, you know what? If Drew and Charles were in that scene in the deep background and that we just had like a framed picture of where they were amongst like 12 people on a desk, it would have been like, for us nerds, it would have been the fucking like the trump card of all trump cards. And like, I actually don't want you guys to have a speaking role. I don't even want to really see your faces. I want you to be in like out of focus.
Deep background.
But I want to see, I would love to see that. That would be the dream.
I want to get killed. Maybe the not in Mission Impossible because I really want to be squibbed.
You want to squib.
I really want like a giant. You know,
it's so funny because like actors, they don't want to be squibbed at all. I found out when I did a movie where a bunch of people get shot. And like, I was like kind of surprised, but then I found out, realized, oh, the squibs really hurt. And none of the actors wanted to be squibbed, so we had to have stunt people be squibbed for all of the people getting shot. But Drew is ready. He wants to be squibbed.
I want to see Drew riding a motorcycle and Tom Cruise crash into him midair and tackle him.
Well, you know what? We almost had a cameo of sort. Charles, should we talk about the near Ooh, cameo yeah. associated with us in the movie?
Do we want to? Because it still might happen.
Could happen. Let's just say that we've submitted five audio files of our dogs to the great sound team of these movies, and we're hoping that they almost made it into seven,
but they audio didn't.
Audio files
so
of your
eight.
Dogs.
Tom Cutum from Seven. I'll let you decide which scene they used to be in, but yeah,
I think they might still be there in the background of the train stuff.
They are, yeah. I think they're in the train. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. My dog has a howl that's very interesting sounding that I think they put in as part of the train squeal.
They layered it in.
We had James Mather on the old version of our show talking about the sound for Rogue Nation and Fallout and Top Gun Maverick, and now we've got to get him back to talk about Dead Reckoning Part One, and we have to grill him on where the dogs are and getting them into Part Eight. Please.
There are actual dogs in Part Two, so maybe
yes,
they can sub in for the actual dogs.
Yeah. Oh, there's hope. Fingers crossed.
There's an episode that we did with Elliot Koretz on Miami, on one of our Miami Nice shows. Katie Walsh and I did, who's the sound designer on both Miami Vice and Collateral, and that great shot in the alleyway of Cruz like, "Yo, homie, is that my briefcase?" And he shoots. He said that for that first shot, they layer in like in the like for half a frame, like an explosion, like this like explosion in the background, so that first gunshot has just that like, I don't know, like infinitesimal kind of punch that you can't get in the actual gunshot. And he said, "I layered it in, and Michael really liked it."
I remember the sound is so distinct. I've heard stories about the sound for Heat that we talked to somebody. You remember who it was, Drew? One of the sound guys that we talked to worked on Heat, and we asked him about that, and he described what they did for Heat. Do you remember this?
No, did they say they all went crazy, and that was the key to?
Yes. Oh, it was Mark Stockinger, who we talked to him for both. Because we did a miniseries on John Wick, so he was supervising sound editor on Mission Impossible 2, Mission Impossible 3, John Wick, and John Wick 2, and John Wick 3. And so we had him on the show. In part two of our episode, we did end up talking to him about the shootout in downtown Los Angeles in Heat. And he talks about it in that. But I remember, I love hearing those stories about them firing real guns into cars and stuff and recording the sound of it and all that stuff.
Yeah, all the on-set sound, all the sound that was recorded on the day is what's basically in Heat, because they were trying to recreate it with sound effects. And he's like, "This isn't what it sounded like. It doesn't have any of the, you know, the reverberance of like all the buildings and the concrete and the cavernous sound of the street fire. It's amazing." That's one that if you're watching it late at night at home and you want to scare the living daylights out of your family and make him feel like there's a terrorist invasion in your lounge room, just leave it on and not manage the sound. I mean, I don't know anyone who would have
I did fall asleep to Heat the other night. I'll just, when I'm sleeping on the couch, when I fall asleep on the couch, I just like put on a movie that I know I'm going to fall asleep to. I'm like, yeah. Oh, I'm going to put on Heat and I'm going to fall asleep to that.
Lethal Weapon, Last Boy Scout, you name it. Those are the kind of movies they go on. Drew could have died in the Last Boy Scout. I feel like Tony Scott killing you in that would have been you.
I would have loved that.
Yeah.
Friday night is a great night for football, as we all know.
God, I love that movie.
I feel like there's on one of the versions of the soundtrack, there's like a 2.5 minute version, the full theme music for Friday night's a great night for football. But on the subject of Miami Vice, I don't know. Do you guys have The Bear in Australia, Hulu show?
We only just got the second season, but I was sent. Okay. I was sent many a meme.
Okay. About the password.
About the password.
Yeah, yeah. Charles, have you watched The Bear yet?
I haven't watched The Bear. I need to. I hear
Charles thinks
things.
That television is below him. By the way,
I don't think that. I just don't have time in my life to do that. I have two kids, and
let's just look at what he's watched instead of The Bear.
Bring out my letterbox or the log, the movie log that we have, and it was not worth it.
In true Drew Taylor style, which one's more honest, Charles? Is it the face you show to the world on Letterboxd or is it the spreadsheet? Because if it's not the spreadsheet, if it doesn't have that level of honesty and candor about what you're watching, I don't want to know.
I'm not hiding any titles from Letterboxd. The thing about Letterboxd, though, is that that's the downside of Letterboxd is that it doesn't log TV shows. So the way I log TV is I put full seasons in our movie log it's technically the moving image log because we include television as well.
I've stopped putting television on because I feel like Charles is judging me for watching television stuff.
Oh, you don't put your television stuff?
No, because I used to do it episode by episode, which I thought was the only. That's we all have different philosophies of how to log. I think that's really the only way to log is.
Drew is a Soderberghian purist.
Yes, sometimes I go into other people's. This is the real secret shit: is that I go into other people's boxes and try to clean it up a little bit because it's such.
I do that too. Some of our friends will misspell titles, or they won't put the title exactly right, and I'll go in and I'll put the right title. Hopefully they're not listening to this.
So like right now, my most watched on Letterboxd this year from everything that I've logged, I've watched Mission Impossible Fallout 4 times, Edge of Tomorrow Good twice, point. Dead Reckoning twice, Jack Reacher twice, and the movie with J-Lo and Owen Wilson, Marry Me, twice with my wife because she loves it so much. There are maybe others that I've watched twice.
Maybe you should be running Light the Fuse.
We should bring Blake into the spreadsheet.
Sure. Oh, yeah. If you want that evil put on you, Blake, we'd love to include you on there.
Listen, I only want to be harshly judged or gassed up by one person, and that's Drew Taylor. So if I get invited into this
thing, don't worry, you will be that for sure.
Because it is weird because you guys did that great, like it was on the eve of all of the strikes. You guys were watching Mission Impossible 1 together and had an Instagram live. And here I roll up. And instead of talking about Mission Impossible for the first 10 minutes, Drew's like, so how about those thirst traps in your speedo? Just gassed up my Instagram for all the people in the live chat. I was like, oh my God.
You probably got like tens of thousands of followers after that, wanting to see the speedo shots.
100%. 100%.
Listen, like you're living our dream life. You do podcasts a lot, but you go to the beach and you enjoy time with your family, whereas Charles and I are just trapped in a dark cave.
I've had those times. And look, I get a little bit of like behind the magic of you guys working so hard, and I'm just such a huge fan and admirer. And it's, you know, the sacrifices you guys have had to make to make all of this happen and to go official and to like bring us everything you're bringing us. It's just special. So I think this is it's a good way to go out. I love you guys. You're so fantastic. Now Drew can no longer say that I've never invited him on the show to not do something like minute by minute. Because
I thought maybe we would be talking about a minute from Mission Impossible or something. I thought this was really my time to shine, but no.
I have to tease it. There's more of us that we can do it. And I would rather, if even though you are official, if you guys can't do it on the main feed anymore, I will happily do another minute from Fallout. There's a Fallout minute. I don't know which one, but like, if I didn't do the minute that had Luther going, my man, I don't know what I could do. Like that makes me cry almost every time. Ving Rhames, like king shit of all king shits.
We're trying to find ways we want to talk about Dead Reckoning Part One on the show, but we don't want to just have an episode where it's just me and Drew talking. We like to bring people on. So we want to bring like our favorite, we love Bilga Abiri, have him come on the show and talk about the movie. But maybe it'd be good.
Who just interviewed John Woo, by the way.
Well, we'd love to interview John. We're working. No. John Woo is at the top of our list.
Bilga did interview.
Yeah, I know. That interview was fantastic. Amazing. I loved it. Yeah, so we really got to get Woo. But no, but like, maybe you could come on and talk about a minute from Dead Reckoning Part 1 with us. What'd you say, Drew? Sorry.
Yeah. I just don't think this episode has any business being on the main feed. This was an absolute honky-tonk roadshow of an episode, and I feel
Drew, you don't feel worthy.
You know, I don't feel worthy. I feel like I did not bring it. I feel like I didn't know the subject material. I feel like I could have done a tight five on Tony's movies. I was visiting Charles. I was actually staying with Katie Walsh when he died.
Give us your tight five right now on Tony. Tell us about Tony.
Well, I just think Tony is the best. I think he's so underrated. I think that
he really is.
How many filmmakers have a debut movie as good as The Hunger? Like, give me a break.
They don't.
That was a more recent video. Like, I only saw it for the first time, I think, during the pandemic. I think 2020, I saw it for the first time, and I was blown away. I mean, it's like the level of, like, the technical side. It's just like, holy cow. It's amazing.
Well, this is what I would say is as well. I've been, because we do a bit of work with Imprint Films, like this little sensational boutique Blu-ray company in Oz, they've been doing director's focuses. And like, I think the best box set, like DVD Blu-ray box set that I've seen in the last couple of years, they did this thing called Collaborations, which was Zhang Yimou and Gong Li's collaborations together. Like they did, like, I think it was like seven movies in this one sensational box set, had essays, all new, like a whole bunch of new features. It was great. But they did a Walter Hill one and they did a Sid Fury one in the upcoming month that is just about to be available. And, you know, some of the guys on Twitter, like we were using our Twitter powers for good rather than evil for a rare occurrence and going like, we need all the Tony Scott. We need a Tony Scott box set with all Tony's movies, with like commentary tracks, with essays, with the whole shebang. You really need it all together, especially some of his stuff that's really hard to find these days on like a beautiful 4K or a Blu-ray. It's just like, we need all of it together because he's been reappraised constantly. He's right on the cusp and he's just fantastic. Like Ridley's been there forever. He feels like a staple, but Tony never gets enough love.
Imprint is region free, right?
It is region free.
Yeah. I need to get some of those.
You need to. You need to.
I need more DVDs in my life. My wife will. my wife is listening to this in the next room and going, yeah, right.
Yeah.
I'm just now getting back into collecting more discs.
I have.
Drew kind of helped convince me to get, because I sort of fell into a streaming hole of just like watching movies that I owned through Vudu or whatever. And it's like, no. It looks better on disc. Like, it's okay to take a minute out of your life to go get the disc out of the closet.
Top Gun 4K. And I've just recently bought, there's really great 4K steelbooks that have the IMF seal on them that are sold in the UK. They're the UK versions of the 4K Mission Impossibles. And I just recently bought 1, 5, and 6 on 4K upgraded with those ones. And I'll go back and I'll go and get 2 and 3 later. But yeah, like,
wait, what about 4?
I will get 4, but this is the thing. I'm sorry, guys, you know, to bring the fire. 4 is so great, but the last act stinks. Like, it's not.
Blake, absolutely incorrect. Hold on, Blake, you're getting 2 and 3 before 4?
No, I'll get 4, but the 2, 3, 4 can wait.
Okay.
1, 5, 6.
Okay.
must own.
I thought
on...
you were like putting four like on a clear floor in the series.
It's in, it's in the middle. It's in the middle.
Okay,
but it's,
okay,
it's
okay.
not
that's
my.
Fine. That's fine.
It's not the last act.
I accept
the,
that.
The first two acts you. Sensational, but the last act I'm like. Eh. But even but that that's why even with, when people sometimes downgrade three, I'm like, can't downgrade Philip Seymour Hoffman. I'm gonna find her. I'm gonna hurt her. You can't. It's just the greatest. He's the fucking king of the villains in the series. Like he's great.
I still wish that they used him better in the finale.
Yeah, but it was end up just being a punch up. You know, you can't always have like, you know, the great Philip Seymour Hoffman scenes. We know it. You know, I'll suck your cock for $1,000, but Brand can't watch. You know, like, like, you know, like it's never going to top that. So, you know, I think you're holding a bar too high, Charles. You're holding a bar.
I think the third act of Ghost Protocol works. I love everything in India. I love the car park. I love how weird it is that he tries to, he, you know, kills himself for this, this goal and then has to watch his dying view is watching Ethan Hunt thwart him. I think it's great.
Yeah.
And it's... I love Tom.
I actually
and,
watched it last
Paul
night.
Driving. Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. I watched it last night. In preparation for the show. I just, the last act just doesn't work for me. Like, it's so gangbusters all the way up to Dubai. It's like the prison at the beginning, Dean Martin playing. Wow. Like, unbelievable. But the last act just doesn't, it goes soft. Whereas, like, the others, even though, like, Rogue Nation gets considerably smaller towards the end, Fallout obviously goes gangbusters. Dead Reckoning Part 1, absolute lunacy. Yeah, like, I just don't love it. I don't love it. It's not my fave. I do love him running through
that's
Beijing.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing that's so great about this series is that everybody has different rankings. There's no consensus of like, this is the best one in the series. There's a different Mission Impossible movie for everybody.
There is.
Mission Impossible, Monday. Drop what you're doing, Mission Impossible.
One final thing, and this is a... I think this is a good spot to end is I am actually going to ask Charles, as you do in your show, to say this mission, like this message will self-destruct in 5 seconds, but I'm waiting the 5 seconds before the explosion. Okay. So I'm retconning. If there's one bit of feedback, I'm like, Charles, you need to wait the 5 seconds. Now you got the music.
But that's part of the joke. It's I say it as quickly as I can and then it explodes.
You're in a rush. He's the new guy. He doesn't realize
how to
time this
out. Do you know which explosion? See, this is the power of being Paramount official. Do you know what explosion from what movie that is?
Did we pick one? Did we end up picking one? Because I remember we ended up using a library from like royalty free sound effects as well. Did we end up picking?
Oh, really?
Of...
I thought we picked.
Are you talking about the fuse at the beginning, the sound effects fuse?
Well, we could talk about that. I thought the explosion. I thought you
because
listened to like 500
we now have the ability to use clips from the movie. So obviously, the beginning of our show now has clips, has quotes from different movies. We have a quote from each of the six first movies. But then we also have a fuse lighting sound effect.
Yes.
Which is, I think it's mostly from Ghost Protocol, right?
Yeah. Light the fuse. Where he actually says
and then
light
maybe,
the fuse.
Maybe there's a little bit of three, the match, or one, I mean, sorry, a little bit of the match lighting in one as well, too. But the explosion at the end, what's the explosion from, Drew? I thought it was mostly royalty-free stuff.
Oh, well, I remember listening to many explosions. I thought you were going to say, oh, the explosion is from.
I listened to I think there were 1,000 explosion options that I was listening to from this library. And I got through, I think, 400 or 500 of them. And then I was like, this is fine. The one that we have here is fine. Still not in love with what we ended up with, but we didn't have time to make it any better. So it doesn't feel enough like a girthy explosion. It feels more like a fizzle to me. And I'm sort of bummed out about it, but maybe we'll improve it when we have more time.
You just got to, I mean, there's some, speaking of Tony Scott, there's some great Paramount Tony Scott explosions, surely.
True.
You can find an explosion, get some Tony in there. Drew tailored like a shirt, as he said, and Charles is Charles Hood with zeros instead of O's. Yes. Their podcast is the official Mission Impossible podcast, Light the Fuse. And they haven't, this isn't Dylan Goes Electric. The show is still sensational. It's still weird. It's still
wait,
fun.
Was it bad when Dylan went electric?
This is, yes. this is, this is,
Drew, without hesitation.
It was like that, but it had an electric guitar over it. Yeah.
This is why, see, they're still the same gang. Legends, I'm so proud of you. So happy for you. I know how hard you're working, so I hope that that gets easier. But as one of your biggest fans of your show and of you guys as people, thank you so much for coming on to talk nonsense with me. Thanks for participating in a minute. Drew, hopefully next time I can prepare you. I know that, Drew, you're going to probably pop up.
I feel like this was maybe the worst minute you've ever done.
No, it's
just
not.
Just because of us.
Never.
Just because of us.
Never. And I know Charles is coming up. He's in the suite of interviews that are coming up for Podcaster and Commander when I'm digging into that as we speak.
Yes, I need that in my life. And, not for me, you know, not I for my interview, across, but for everybody else.
I came across an interesting tidbit that the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise was actually born of Master and Commander, because apparently there was that Disney could have bought in, because, you know, it was a co-production between I don't know how many fucking studios on that, but they were given the option to buy into it as well and be a co-producer, and they ultimately declined. But those conversations about Master and Commander ultimately said, well, what if we made Pirates of the Caribbean, which was at the time thought of maybe being a direct-to-video or a TV movie, into a giant film that would and the rest is history.
That's pretty crazy. It's kind of impossible to stress how much the Pirates of the Caribbean idea seemed like a terrible one before that movie came out.
And what we need to say is that's what's wrong with our culture, that there are 5 Pirates of the Caribbean movies and 1 Master and Commander movie. That's exactly what's wrong. Gents, you're the best. Thank you so much for doing this. Drew, never change. Charles,
always change.
Charles, keep changing.
Charles, I want your unadulterated Charles on Letterboxd. I don't want any of this. You know, I watched The Last Boy Scout.
No, it's all there. I just delay.
Is Paw Patrol on there? And theatrical?
Paw Patrol. Hey, Paw Patrol's in there. Of course. I got Paw Patrol in there. I think more than once I've vlogged that one because my kids love it.
Yeah.
I'm unashamed that the Paw Patrol movie I'm kind of into.
Yeah. It's good. Bad. It's better than the show. The show stinks. I always tell my kids, I'm like, this mayor, he needs to go to jail. Someone needs to put him in jail. He's abusing small children and puppies. He needs to go to jail. And then finally, they caught him.
The animation studio that did the animation for the Paw Patrol movie did Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem. So.
Oh, well, there you go.
There you go.
That's why I'm kind of excited about the new movie, too.
Yes.
You
saw a sizzle. Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
They're going Tron with it. They've got a lot of neon stuff for their suits and stuff.
Yeah, their superhero one. Yeah, I've seen the dodgy TV animation version of that. I think they're just going to blow it up and supersize it, make them some superheroes. But gentlemen, we're not here to talk about Paw Patrol. We're here to talk about Mission Impossible. We're here to talk about Tony Scott.
You're still trying to wrap this up for the last 20 minutes. I think you probably have to go somewhere. Sorry.
I don't have to go anywhere. I'm trying to wrap the episode up. And now, Charles, you have the job of saying this message will self-destruct, and it's actually going to take 5 seconds.
So we're going to count it out afterwards?
No, I'm just going to know.
Okay.
Do we also get some Charles? My favorite thing that Charles does now is the, and we'll be back with more from Vanessa Kirby.
I feel like you do it. You do those more sensually than I do. I prefer your read on that.
No, I think Charles is a real...
That was an ask from Paramount to make sure that it's very clear to people that there's more episode to come. So we had to put those little messages in there before the ad breaks.
Then here we go. Drew, you get to say, and we'll be back with more Drew Taylor on The Great Muppet Caper. The Great Henson Caper.
If I am not a part of the Henson one, I won't.
Are you doing Henson?
Be mad.
Yes. We're doing a show. Ethan Warren and I, after Pod Thomas Anderson, Ethan and I concocted an idea to do The Great Henson Caper, which is about the career and life and work of Jim Henson. And
you have to have Drew on. You have to have Drew on for that. Absolutely.
He's on.
I love Jim Henson, but I know nothing compared to Drew.
He's
so you
on.
Have to have Drew.
It's
okay. I'm ready.
He's on his
I want to be in the later part because I'm working on a book proposal about the later, in fact, like the last few days of his life. So that is. Let me know when you get to that incredibly sad section of the podcast. Let me know.
So you
I think
get
Drew
to
should
say,
be all over it, all eras. Get Drew in there to talk. You'll want him.
You can just say, it, just like the Ethan Hunt eras, he's in all eras. But Drew, you get to say, and we'll be back with more Drew Taylor in the okay, Great Handsome Caper. Ready?
All right. We'll be back with more from Drew Taylor on the Great Handsome Caper.
There you go, Ethan. He's signed on. He's ready to go.
There we go.
And now can you give me one more reading that's even more perverted? Like
you
got to
get more sensual.
Heart?
I get feel like sensual. You're holding back.
Okay. All right. We'll be back with more from Drew Taylor on the Great Henson Caper.
That's sexy. That's sexy.
You got to get in real close on the mic and get, make love yeah, to the mic. That's what you got to do.
Make love to the mic.
All right, Charles, give us your wrap up so we can go on with our lives.
Wait, what do I even say? This
You've done 200
shows. Said it 100 times.
It's just this message. So do we do any different wording, or is it just this message will self? Okay, all right. This message will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
And it feels like such a 20th century movie. It feels like something David Lean would have done or tried to do when he still had that kind of currency. And even then, he might not have succeeded.
It's incredible because, like, if you don't have time to watch all 5 seasons of Lost, you can just watch Fearless.
Not a week goes by that I don't think of the ending of Gallipoli. It's left a mark. A year of living dangerously. And then something like Last Wave, even that's so deeply embedded with the land and the story of the land, the story of place. You know, I don't know that I'd seen very many movies at that point in my life that had such a down ending, and they had such a, you know, sort of strong sense of folklore attached to it as that. And something always so poetic and lyrical about Peter Weir's work.
Gallipoli was the first movie that ever traumatized me, and I don't think I ever really recovered from it. And I'm still upset that they played it in school. Like, I don't think it's actually possible to make they say it's not possible to make an anti-war movie, but I think Peter Weir pulled it off.
Yes.
Because no one watches that movie then thinks, I want to go to war.
Peter Weir is the greatest director that Australia has ever produced. Like, bar none, hands down. Like, no one else is even in the room.
I think you have covered some really titanic filmmakers and some really titanic films so far, but I truly think what makes Peter Weir special and what makes you doing this one special is we don't talk about Peter Weir that way, and we should. Peter Weir is one of those guys who I don't get why he isn't a bigger name, why he isn't more in that rarefied air, because I think film for film, he's one of our very best filmmakers. He has brought his A game repeatedly to many properties. There are films of his that I hold very dear. Fearless, The Mosquito Coast. I will fight somebody if they talk bad about The Mosquito Coast. It's, man, I love that movie. But in general, I just think he is a special filmmaker, a smart, lyrical, hallucinatory filmmaker. He's a very dreamy filmmaker, and I don't think he gets his due.
You know, Master and Commander is one of my all-time favorite movies. Easily one of the best movies of the last 20 years. It's, it's a grand scale. There's a historical backdrop to it. But at the same time, there's such an intimacy in the relationships.
Which I think is not just a great film and one of the last great epics in the truest sense. I think is actually kind of a sliding doors change point moment in cinema history. I think 2003, when that comes along, and it is an old-fashioned, you know, we don't make them like that anymore type film. I think if Master and Commander spawns a franchise at that point, the entire cinema landscape globally is completely different.
That's the movie that I wanted to see 10 of those, you know. I know they're big fans of Fast and Furious and everything, and God bless you, but Master and Commander should have been.
It's one of those things. Again, I'm not a seafaring man, sir. But there is a sense of authenticity. There's a sense of really watching a genuine dedication to recreating history unfold on a big screen in front of you that can't help but inspire just genuine admiration and awe.
If you're gonna pick a film where he really brings every one of his skills to the table, it's Master and Commander. I think you picked the right one, man.
Yeah, very excited to see what you you pull out of this, Blake.
That's right. Our next series is Peter Weir and Russell Crowe's Master and Commander. The series is called Podcaster and Commander.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.